Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. Some stories don't need a lot of introduction, so suffice to say, this next one is about a curious phenomenon involving Canada's national animal. We are talking about the beaver, and a beaver behavior that has scientists puzzled. Here's The Current's Jessica Lindsay with her documentary, A Salty Tale.
Canadians can be arrogant. It's not a trait we like to admit to, but it's true. There are certain kinds of things we are super confident about. Too confident, maybe. Stuff we think we know all about, but we actually don't know. Take beavers, for example. I thought I knew just about everything there was to know about beavers.
There was a time when beaver lodges like this one and the busy beavers that build them had almost disappeared from Canada.
I was one of a generation of Canadians who grew up with those iconic black and white TV interstitials, those little vignettes on our country's wildlife.
And it's made a successful comeback.
Hinterland's Who's Who ran seemingly constantly through the 60s and 70s. And pulling it up on YouTube, I was reminded of just how many episodes were about the beaver.
Beavers may be the most prepared creature in the wilderness. They have
one
so many
was nothing but fun facts.
Their eyes have clear goggle-like eyelids for underwater protection.
They have orange teeth that never stop growing.
And are extra strong thanks to enamel rich in
beavers iron. Live in freshwater systems.
They have a split toenail on each hind.
They can hold their breath for 15 minutes.
They have valves in their ears and nose.
The inside of their lips are lined with fur.
Chewing underwater.
And of course, we all know that the beaver is our national symbol, officially recognized as such in 1975. It's on our nickel. The one guy I'll introduce you to here in a bit thinks that the beaver was actually ripped off there. It should have been the quarter.
Out of the water, beavers are not very fast.
Mind you, others might counter that it's curious a country would recognize the second largest rodent in the world on its currency. So all this to say, nothing about the beaver has surprised me. Of course not. I'm Canadian.
This is the first beaver that I have rehabilitated.
And like any good Canuck, I am up on my international beaver news, especially when it involves an orphan beaver rescued in Louisville, Kentucky, and lovingly named after a Canadian pop star.
Something happened to mom, dad, and all his family. He was just one stray little orphan. JB is short for Justin Beaver.
Little Justin Beaver was adopted by the founder of the Second Chances Wildlife Center.
People went berserk over him for a couple reasons. I think everybody really loved his name. And people really don't often get to see beavers in general.
JB does make some awfully cute noises.
Brigitte Briard took Justin Beaver into her home when he was just a kit, and she's gotten used to living with him, though he does get up to some odd things.
He's very particular about what he wants to do. He has something in his mind, and he's going to do it, and he's going to do it his way. It's a beaver thing.
Where are you going with that, JB?
He's really doing
in this video, that beaver thing manifests itself in the young JB dragging stuffies, magazines, shoes, a lacrosse stick, a Santa hat, the front hall carpet through Brigitte's home with purpose.
He's been so busy.
He's building a dam.
Sometimes he does, well, actually pretty regularly, he does the bathtub. He likes to dam that. Every once in a while, a dishwasher.
But not everything he does is so adorable.
JB has done about $500 or $600 worth of damage to my house. He has.
It's frustrating for me that I really can't get angry because, well, he didn't ask to be orphaned. He's just doing the best he can. Beavers need to chew. He just needs to chew. And my walls and my baseboards and my furniture, they're wood.
He gets his favorite type of trees.
It's been like 2 years of this. So Brigitte Briard is ready for Justin Beaver, or JB, to move outside into the pen she's been building him and what she hopes will be ready for him this month. And while she'll be glad to reclaim her baseboards, she will miss the bedtime routine and those little breathing sounds JB makes when he's drifting off.
It slows down. His regular goes.
It may be strange keeping a beaver in your home, but JB's behavior is anything but strange when you consider he's a beaver. So I still thought I knew everything I needed to know about beavers. Until one morning last summer, when I came across one swimming in a tidal pond, a body of salt water, on the island where I live just west of Vancouver. I didn't think much of it at the time, but then sometime later, I happened upon a story with a headline that caught my eye. The gnawing question of saltwater beavers. And I wondered, is this really a thing? Saltwater beavers? It seemed impossible. The first thing we learn about beavers, after all, is that they live in fresh water. Baffled, I told my mom about it. I thought I'd amaze her. Instead, she told me something even crazier. A story on CBC on As It Happens back in 2014 and artfully introduced by Jeff Douglas.
Gnarly old bark is no match for its bite, so it's usually best for us vulnerably soft humans to steer clear of vengeful beavers. Not that that warning means much to anybody, because beavers almost never attack people. But you will notice that I said almost never, and almost never is not never, is it? Last week, Jeremy McNaughton was snorkeling with his friend Paul Scarry off Nova Scotia's eastern shore when he encountered a truly enormous beaver. That caught them off guard, because they were diving in salt water, and beavers are freshwater folk.
I love that introduction for so many reasons. You notice how in Canada, we can even refer to beavers as freshwater folk. But the real drama is, of course, that you've got two beavers paddling around in Canadian salt water, one of which is attacking people. I reach out to Molly Alves. She's a wildlife biologist with the Tulalip tribes in Washington state and the head of the Tulalip Beaver Project. I ask her if, in her research, she's seen signs of saltwater beavers along the coast.
Well, I didn't even see signs of beavers. I initially saw a beaver swimming through an estuary channel and just thought, what are you doing here? This is not very typical habitat for you. I thought it was kind of just misguided.
But it turns out it wasn't just misguided. And Molly wasn't the only researcher who'd begun to notice strange beaver activity in saltwater habitat, including one just up the coast from Tulalip.
Greg? Hi. Thanks for having me out.
Sure, my pleasure.
Greg Hood is a senior research scientist with the Skagit River System Cooperative in Laconor, Washington. He's not a beaver guy. But back in 2009, he was out looking for a shrub in the Skagit Delta, and he found something that made him what he calls an accidental beaver guy.
I kept stumbling across these beaver dams that were kind of weird-looking beaver dams. They didn't fill up a channel entirely. They're kind of low in the channel. And I'd never heard of beaver in tidal marshes. So it just was a puzzle for me. I was curious about it.
And when you first saw them, did you know immediately they were beaver dams?
Well, I was kind of reluctant to come to that conclusion. It's 'cause for one thing, I didn't expect to see them in tidal marshes. And so I just had to see them repeatedly and just convince myself it couldn't be anything else.
And then there was the clincher.
And I just finished the work for the day. I was walking back towards the boat, and I was walking down the channel, and the water was about thigh deep. And a beaver was swimming towards me. And I just stopped, and I had my hands full of things, and I was trying to put them down and grab my camera before the beaver noticed me. And unfortunately, it noticed me before I could get to the camera. And it turned around and swam the other direction. But that was pretty exciting. The beaver got within about 3 meters of me.
The conclusion? Saltwater beavers are actually a thing. Back in Tulalip, Molly's colleague, wildlife biologist David Bailey, has offered to take me into the tidal marshes, where he's met saltwater beavers of his own.
I feel like you have so much gear and I don't have any.
We're kayaking there. It's low tide, I'm wearing chest waders, and I've waterproofed my microphones and recorders with duct tape. David seems born for this kind of field work. It's a hot day, and he regrets leaving his cap on the dash of the pickup, a trucker hat with a drawing of a beaver below the words, Beaver Hunter. Still, he's nothing but dimples out here, and his boyish enthusiasm and sense of wonder at everything we see, birds and otter.
A lot of times I see herons, like, up in these trees.
It's infectious. We've paddled 20 minutes up the estuary when we finally pull our kayaks back through the mud and pick our way into the brush. David was out here tracking birds when he first came across these little tidal creeks we are now jumping across, channels made by beavers. Then he found some unusual dams.
And then, but then they have these structures that we're looking at here, which is like the world's smallest dam. It's pretty much right here.
Most of these dams aren't even knee height. At high tide, they disappear entirely. They're built low to keep the power of the tides from breaking them apart. And when David realized what he was looking at, he thought, these are beavers with intention. They've settled here.
You want me to take some?
No, I'm going to make a run for it.
Okay, yeah. Nice.
I kind of just fall.
I'm not sure I call that graceful.
As he leads me towards the lodge, I keep getting hung up on brambles and falling into channels I can't see because of how thick the brush is. David jokes that this is why no one knows anything about these beavers.
The lodge is over there, and this would be kind of like the front door, the porch to it all, I guess, and different ways of accessing that lodge.
The lodge, David is pointing out, has multiple entrances, as all beaver lodges do. But here the entrances are at different heights, again, to accommodate changes in tidal floods.
Well, I guess not really the backside, but in the middle of their complex.
It's all seasonal scrub and shrub out here. Not much in the way of the usual beaver building material. Trees like alder and willow. And you see that in this lodge. Parts of it are actually alive with spring growth, suggesting there would be lots to chew on in the summer. But David, he can't imagine how these beavers could possibly have had enough to eat in the wintertime. And when he first discovered all of this, David was as surprised as Greg had been. He still is.
It's definitely crazy. It's definitely eye-opening that, like, me as a beaver, like, if I was trying to be a beaver and live out here, I don't think I would, you know, do this. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
David's now standing on top of the lodge, bouncing gently. He's hoping for a snore or a grunt from the beavers that he believes are sleeping inside.
Sometimes this time of year, you can hear them actually moaning, like the kits and stuff will go like, and it's hard for me to hear it most of the time. But like when we house the beavers at the Tulalip fish hatchery before relocation, you can, you know, they'll moan and stuff, which is a sound that I feel like most people don't ever get to hear or even think that they make. So if you were out here at night or something, you might be able to hear them actually gnawing on a tree and that sound of, you know, just like. But
can you do that again?
Now I feel like I'm a beaver.
I meet Greg Hood the next day. He's agreed to take me out into the Skagit River Delta to where he first ran into that beaver in the intertidal zone.
Okay. Would you like to pull on the anchor?
Sure would.
We're in a boat with an outboard motor aptly named the Beaver Tail. And by now, Greg's changed out of his Crocs sandals, which he'd been wearing with socks, despite it being almost 30 degrees out. Now he stands behind me at the back of the boat in rubber boots. He's careful not to run us into any shallows as the tide retreats. He looks like an overgrown Boy Scout in his camouflage hip waders and straw hat. And we pull up to a channel, drop anchor, and Greg produces a map from his tan vest.
We came down this channel, past this inlet.
It's been many years since Greg's been back here. There's no money for intertidal beaver research, so there's no reason for him to visit. He's not sure what we'll find. But within minutes, we come across our first dam.
Oh, here we go. Here is a nice dam.
And Greg is beaming.
Pretty decent dam. Look at that. I feel happy to see them.
Everyone else I've spoken with seems to think it's weird that beavers have established colonies out here in the tidal marsh. So I put the question to Greg.
So do you think it's insane that they're here?
No, I think it's very sensible that they're here. I think
it looks very much like the area I visited with David just the day before. But maybe I'm wrong, because Greg sees nothing but virtue in this habitat. And he tells me that maybe beavers have always built lodges and dams in intertidal zones. But in changing the landscape as dramatically as we have, we're now suffering some kind of collective ecological amnesia.
And so for that reason, people aren't used to looking for them. They haven't looked for them in these areas. But it's a great habitat for beaver. Now, of course, the other issue for beavers, the reason they're building them in these tidal systems, is because the tide goes down. And beaver don't like to walk. They like to swim.
But unlike Greg, Tulalip biologists Molly Alves and David Bailey do have some concerns about what all of this may mean for the health of these animals.
I think that those beavers are probably, not going to thrive, certainly. Like, it's perplexing.
And while some beavers are clearly trying to make a go of it in these environs, we know that salt water is actually poisonous to them. I take the question of beavers living in intertidal zones to Breanne Glynnum, the senior animal care supervisor at the Critter Care Wildlife Society and Rehab Center in Langley, BC.
I think that's really insane. I find that really insane.
And this is coming from a woman who's seen beavers do a lot of strange things. Like the time she got a call about a beaver in Delta, BC, down by the port.
There was a yard bin.
And under that yard bin was a beaver. Breanne was called in to relocate it.
We spent 5.5 hours wading through this ice-cold, disgusting puddle trying to catch this beaver. And I just belly-flopped onto the beaver. It was gross. I don't know why this beaver chose to live there, but he did. But again, he was a 2-year-old trying to find his own body of water, and he chose this puddle.
And that is what most scientists I've spoken with actually think is going on here. Beavers kick their kits out of the family home at 2 years old. They swim off in search of their own territory. And not knowing how dangerous salt water can be to them, they can get themselves into trouble and end up in Breanne's clinic.
So some of them are coming in just a little bit dehydrated. We give them fluids. Others are coming in completely disorientated, walking like they're intoxicated. Some of them aren't even walking at all. They're cold, and then we put them on heat. Some of them, as soon as they warm up, they pass away on their own.
Breanne says that in a 2-month stretch last year, Critter Care picked up 13 sick beavers, more than half of which were suffering saltwater poisoning. She's been watching those numbers climb year over year, and she figures it's because of decreasing freshwater habitat. She can only guess how those Washington State beavers have survived as long as they have.
Are they acting like they're completely normal? Are they swimming in straight lines? Are they, maybe there's some kind of strange evolution going on with them?
For his part, David Bailey, the wildlife biologist, believes the beavers he's been tracking in Tulalip are not the ones to be concerned about.
I worry about beavers that I hear about, like, at the port of Everett, like, literally out in the sound. And I'm like, where are you going and where have you come from? It's beavers that are just carving out some little detention runoff of the city, and you're just like, wow, how are you even surviving? And you're really not providing a lot of ecological benefits either.
The beavers David is describing here are the ones Nick Page encounters all the time through his work as an ecologist with the city of Vancouver.
As the population increase, they seek out new habitats, so they would have moved down.
He's the guy I mentioned earlier, the one that thinks the beaver should be on our quarter, not the lowly nickel.
Ones, like, I mean, these patches of habitat they have, like we're looking in Hinge Park here, and it's tiny. I mean, the wetlands, like,
I've met him in a little park in the city's Olympic Village on the banks of False Creek. It seems to bring back a memory for him about a particularly resourceful beaver.
Mowing down, of course, some nice rose bushes or something. I was like, oh God, you know, this is what I'll get the emails about the next day about all the damage they're being done. But at one point, the beaver was trying to pull the stick it had eaten out of the patch of roses, and it was stuck. And so I was trying to help the beaver remove its branches, and we're having like this tug of war. So you're like, these things are so used to people. Like, they're really within a meter of you. There's dogs and people and bikes around, and they're just like, whatever.
Half a block to the east of where we're standing is a forest of condo towers. And directly in front of us, a beaver lodge.
So what we're looking at is this mound of vegetation, and it's just a mound of sticks and mud that's accumulated over time that the beavers have brought in from different places. And, you know, not only are there sticks, but I see 2x4s, and there's some bird boxes.
Nick says, he was surprised when the beavers first appeared here 5 or so years ago. But he says it's indicative of how beavers adapt to wherever they end up. This particular colony travels between the 5 parks that line the south side of False Creek. They eat from each of the parks, they keep homes in each. And Vancouver's not unique in this. Nick sees it happening in coastal cities all over the world.
You know, we are relearning what beavers do in these habitats. It speaks to that maybe we don't always just understand what they really need or what they tolerate or what they can adapt to.
Adaptation is one thing.
But
one of the sort of challenges now is, where do beavers go next? What happens when the next generation comes along and there's no new habitats for them to colonize?
And as you've likely gleaned from Nick's earlier story about the beaver in the rose bush, at times it also pains him to see what these beavers are doing with this habitat.
You have to think of that, where those sticks came from, though. That's like all the park vegetation and all the trees and things like that. Oh, no, beavers, can you give me a break sometimes?
Back in Laconer, Washington, Greg Hood, the accidental beaver guy, sees an unexpected and potentially huge impact beavers are having in this intertidal landscape.
The beavers are about tripling to quadrupling, the potential numbers of fish that are growing in these in the tidal marshes.
Did you catch that? These beavers are helping fish. Maybe not on purpose, but the way I understand it, Greg's telling me that these intertidal beaver dams are creating ponds that are protecting the very fish we worry most about, like the endangered Chinook salmon.
Another kind of bird that you see that preys on juvenile salmon would be kingfisher, and those are going to be, you know, diving in deep water. They're not going to dive in these little shallow tidal channels. So these are potential predation refuges for juvenile salmon, and beaver are providing that for them.
For his part, biologist David Bailey isn't quite as ready to give the beavers as much of a hat tip as Greg is.
I go back and forth between giving beavers too much credit and not enough, because it's like, in one sense, it's like, it's just a beaver. It's just like a rodent. It's just like driven to just be like, I just need to find food. I just need to, you know, protect myself with water and build a dam, build a lodge. And then at other times, they're building these impressive landscapes, these impressive structures. And so it's like, man, maybe they are, like, they know what they're doing. But I think more than anything, they're just like, I just need to get to that tree over there, and I need to build a little pathway for myself to get over there.
Whatever their differences, David and Greg agree. Nobody's interested in funding research into this phenomenon of the saltwater beaver. David figures that's because there's other wildlife people are more invested in.
It's a lot different than fish. So that's why I feel like if Greg can find a way to do it and relate it to fish, people will be all on board that.
Brianne Glynnum may not want to eat them, but she is very fond of them.
They have really little ears for how big they are. They're really weird-looking creatures, in all honesty. Yeah, their ears are really cute. I always get caught up on them. Whenever I'm examining them, the interns always make fun of me because I'll just be like looking at their feet, making sure their feet are okay, and then I always have to like poke their ear.
Cute ears aside, Greg says we should care for a whole bunch of reasons.
It's a symbol of a forgotten landscape. A lot of people, I think, assume, even professional, you know, habitat managers, tend to assume that we know everything about these habitats, and in fact, we don't. And so how can you manage wisely if you don't really know what you're doing, right? Discovering the beaver is a reminder of that, discovering tidal beaver, of our ignorance, and that we still have a lot to learn.
Brigitte Briard of Kentucky's Second Chances Wildlife Center told me that she sure learned a lot about beavers living with Justin Beaver, as you would, over these last 2 years. Even so, I had one more question for her. Have you ever heard of saltwater beavers?
I am not familiar with them.
So you've, in your wildlife center, I mean, I know Kentucky is inland, so you're not going to have coastal beavers wash up, but you've never heard of the saltwater beaver?
No, I'm going to do my research on that. That's amazing.
Amazing. So says the woman who lives with a beaver.
Who knew? That's our Who Knew category. Jessica Lindsay with the documentary A Salty Tale. Our documentary editor is Joan Weber.